today on Vox Talks Economics, do cultural stereotypes influence bank investments? Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Do Germans trust Greeks and do Brits trust Italians? Well, we know that national stereotypes influence all sorts of personal decisions, but could they determine whether one country's banks hold another country's sovereign debt? Amazingly, it seems the answer might actually be yes. Orkun Saka of City University of London is one of the authors of a new CEPR discussion paper on the topic, and I've come down to his office. I'm with him now. Orkun, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Hello, Tim.
Right at the beginning of the paper, you start off, you say financial markets, even more than other markets, run on trust and stumble in its absence. How so? How do you explain that?
Well, as you know, all of the value that exists in a financial asset is pretty much derived from the monetary payments that an asset promises to deliver in the future. Mm-hmm. So we hold a company's stock or a bond, not because we are really enjoying holding these investments in our hands per se, but because we enjoy the future cash flows that we expect them to generate for us, right? On the other hand, if you were holding a real asset, just to give a simple example, for if you're trading a computer or a table, let's say, then we actually not only can sell it in the future and generate cash flows, but we also benefit from actually using them in the meantime, right? So they generate some usage value. So as opposed to the real side of the economy, which offers this type of, you know, real usage to its customers, financial assets do not really offer this. And they're actually worthless pieces of paper unless they promise to deliver these future cash flows. Therefore, compared to real markets, these markets solely depend on promises, and thus the trust in the sellers of these financial contracts becomes really fundamental.
And do we have some prior evidence from history that investors tend to overweight cultural similarity, which is what we're talking about today, as a proxy for that trust?
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you look at the literature, there is quite a bit of evidence by now on the importance of shared cultural heritage in influencing not only capital investment, but also like the trade across countries. For instance, if you look at some of the papers by Avner Grief, he's showing that, for instance, even medieval traders had, you know, in their minds, this common cultural heritage when they were trading with each other. Mm-hmm. But perhaps the most convincing evidence is the one by Grimblatt and Kelleharju in a very influential article in the Journal of Political Economy, in which they focused on a single country. And they showed that, in this case, this country was Finland. They showed that Finnish investors are more likely to invest in firms that publish their reports in the same native language that the investors use, and also whose CEOs come from a similar cultural heritage.
It seems so unlikely, but it's true.
It is true. Yeah, I mean, you can interpret this in a way that, you know, maybe these people really trust these firms more. Or you can also think that maybe, you know, this common cultural heritage, such as sharing the same language, can help them process or interpret the information in those reports in a more accurate way. So it can be a rational behavior as well.
And is there a sort of down-to-earth practical reason why trust is important if, you know, for example, I'm a German bank and I'm going to buy Italian sovereign bonds?
Well, excellent question, Tim. So if you look at this literature about trust, indeed, there are some contexts where trust may matter in practical terms. For instance, let's say you are a bank and you have this one-to-one relationship with an individual borrower, right? Trust may matter in this case in a way that higher trust would both convince you to lend more to this borrower and also increase the borrower's incentives to pay you back to keep their reputation, right? So for both sides, it would be rational to use the trust as a kind of proxy for their borrowing and lending decisions. However, when it comes to our context in the paper, so we are looking at the sovereign bond market and how banks invest in this market. In theory, this type of a one-to-one trust should not play a role in this market because, as we know from historical examples, sovereigns cannot differentiate between paying back to a German bank, for instance, or to an Italian bank. So, in other words, you can say that there is no selective default in this market. Hence, if banks have different trust perceptions to the same sovereign, this should actually not lead to differential responses in terms of investment behavior. Yet, we find empirical evidence for this.
Now, the first step to come to any sort of conclusion in your research, I guess, is that you have to define what you mean by trust in this context and find a way to measure it. So for you, what is trust?
So it's a difficult concept to kind of quantify.
Yeah.
I and my co-author Barry Eichengreen would agree, definitely. In our study, we borrowed a measure initially proposed by Luigi Guiso, Paola Sapienza, and Luigi Zingales in their seminal paper in the Quarterly Journal of Economics. So what they did in this paper was to measure the trust by looking at this historical series of Eurobarometer surveys in which people in each country in Europe is asked how much they trust to the citizens of another country. And the proxy basically takes the percentage of people in a country that expresses a lot of trust in the citizens of another country. So this is basically our benchmark measure to understand, you know, this cultural trust component.
And first of all, you look at levels of bilateral trust and the cross-border sovereign debt. So to do that, how do you get the data? And do you find that relationship?
Yeah, so the data part is quite interesting because actually, like, until very recently, there was no data set at the individual bank level in terms of, you know, which banks hold which country's bonds. So this is a kind of, you know, rare data set that has recently become available to the researchers. And this is because European Banking Authority and its predecessor, Committee for European Bank Supervisors, have started publishing the results of their stress tests and capital exercises since 2010. So this data actually includes these sovereign exposure measures, which we employ for our study. And the trust data, as I mentioned, comes from the Eurobarometer surveys.
And there is a relationship in this?
Yes, indeed. Indeed, there is a relationship. We find empirical evidence there that, for instance, let's just simplify it with an example. If British people has more trust in Cyprus, for instance, compared to the trust level of German people in Cyprus, then British banks are actually more likely to invest in Cypriot government debt. So this is a statistically significant and a substantial effect, actually.
So it's job done then, isn't it, Orkin? Does this tell us that levels of trust cause investment?
Not necessarily. So we cannot really say that there is an implication of a causal relationship by just looking at this much of evidence yet. So this comparison is a good first attempt, I would say. And it's what the literature has so far been doing to kind of understand the relationship between trust and various other measures of, you know, flows across countries. However, in this setting, the tricky part is that there could be many other omitted factors running in the background and potentially confounding the main relationship that we are trying to establish here. So for instance, let's say going back to the example that I just given you, Britain and Cyprus, let's say, may have other commonalities between each other, right? That Germany and Cyprus doesn't have. For instance, maybe Britain and Cyprus has similar design of their legal system, or maybe in general, British people are more informed about what's going on in Cyprus than the German people are, right? Because let's say British people are more likely to go there for holidays and etc. So all of such factors need to be controlled in an estimation of this sort to make sure that the main relationship that we are looking here is not driven by any of these. However, the problem obviously is that no matter how many factors you include and control for, there will always be a tough academic referee out there who is going to point out an additional factor.
But you have got to the point where you are making a causal claim here. So how do you establish this causal relationship?
Yeah, so we wanted to go a little further than what the previous literature has done in terms of creating a different empirical design. So with Barry Eichengreen, my co-author in this paper, we had this idea that multinational banks headquartered within the same country may still have some cultural differences among each other, especially if they have different branch networks across countries. And thus, for instance, their management teams could actually come from different countries because of the intra-company transfers across countries. So we thought that, you know, this would actually differentiate them in terms of, you know, their cultural perceptions of different target countries to invest. And then what we did was basically we calculated a trust measure for each multinational bank in our sample by weighting the trust of their countries of operation with the corresponding shares of branches in each bank's total network. So the advantage here is that this gives us the chance to be able to compare banks within the same home country. So for instance, we can compare the Cypriot exposures of HSBC versus RBS, both situated within the UK, right? Mm-hmm. The former, HSBC, has more presence in France, and the latter, RBS, has more presence in Ireland. Of course, this gives them a slightly different cultural attitude towards the same target country. So in such a comparison, any type of confounder that may operate between UK and Cyprus will not affect our results, as by construction, such factors would apply to both of the banks. So by using this empirical design, we show that trust still has a substantial impact on the bank's sovereign bond investments.
It is ingenious, but in this hierarchical concept, who is actually doing the trusting or not trusting, and how are they influencing the investment decisions?
Very spot on, Tim. I think this is an excellent question, something that we have really spent quite a bit of time thinking about. to our perspective, we have identified three different ways that branches in different countries may affect the sovereign bond investments of the multinational bank. So one way, maybe the most direct way, is that maybe these multinational banks are delegating these operations, sovereign bond purchases, to their subsidiaries in different countries, which to our knowledge, and if you look at the anecdotal evidence, is very unlikely because, you know, these are very big investments. And, you know, in general, they're overall parameters are determined really in the headquarters. So it's kind of unlikely to be a channel, but still theoretically, this is possible. Another channel that we had in mind was when these sovereign bond investments are being done, of course, the headquarters depend a lot on the internal reporting of different subsidiaries, right? And these different subsidiaries will communicate some internal reports back to the headquarters. And when they are doing this communication, they can actually color this internal information with their own biases, with their own cultural biases. And we think that this is a reasonably realistic channel that the cultural biases might be operating between the branches and the headquarters. However, the downside is that we do not really have access to these kind of, you know, internal confidential documents of banks. A third channel, which also, I guess, gives us a bit of more opportunity to kind of gain access to the data, is the channel of the internal employee transfers between bank headquarters and the subsidiaries in other countries. So in this channel, what would happen is that, you know, even if you have branches in another country, of course, you are going to be more likely to hire people for your headquarters from that country because of the internal promotions, etc. And then those people are going to actually compose your bank management at headquarters who are making these, you know, centralized decisions. And actually, this is something that we can observe in the data. And one of the first things that we have done was to confirm that really, when a bank has branches in a foreign country, that foreign country is more likely to be represented in the managerial team of that country, of that bank. So we confirmed this empirically as well, this third channel.
If you're enjoying this, listen to our episode, The History of International Finance, from February 2019, that investigated the lessons that today's banks can learn from 150 years of cross-border lending.
Put this all together then, all of this information in your model, what does it tell us about the role of trust based on these cultural biases in the decision to hold a country's debt? Does its relationship still exist?
Yeah, of course. It seems to exist. It seems to exist, and it seems to be quite substantial. And if you, for instance, just to give you a quantitative measure of the size of the effect, so if you look at the average bank in Europe and kind of compare their exposures to 30 different European target countries, 58% of the time you see that the bank has actually some exposure, at least some exposure to that target country. But this also tells from the opposite side, this also tells that 42% of the time there is no exposure at all. And this is quite amazing to see in the data because we are talking about the sovereign bond market, which is probably one of the safest asset categories in the world. And half of the time, banks do not even diversify across countries. This 42% is what we call diversification gap in the sovereign bond market. And if we were to compare the trust, let's say, you know, one standard deviation higher trust seems to increase the sovereign exposure probability of a bank by 14%. And this is 1/3 of the total diversification gap in Europe. So it seems to be quite substantial.
Or is this the same for all banks, or do banks that perform better, or bigger banks with more branches everywhere, more international banks, do they rely less on trust?
Yeah, so it seems that. So one of the things that we have looked at is that the banks who are more multinational, let's say, you know, they have more presence in a diverse set of countries. Of course, they are also more likely to be representing different nationalities within their management teams. So these banks actually rely much less on this trust bias than the smaller, maybe less multinational banks. So that seems to be holding in the data. Another thing that we have looked at is that especially those target countries that are, let's say, smaller and less known by the banking system, kind of on the fringes of the sovereign debt markets, they're also more likely to be affected by this trust bias. So this kind of makes sense in the sense that if the banks have more information about, you know, for instance, Germany is a country which is, you know, very commonly held by the European banks. So you would not expect the biases against Germany or in favor of Germany to be operational from the perspective of the banks. But if, for instance, we look at Slovakia, Slovakian government debt, which is not very commonly held by the European banks, then you see that those banks are using more their trust biases as a kind of proxy to make their investments.
I'd imagine that many banks, when they hear this or when they read the paper, would say, no, 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 that doesn't apply to us, right up until the point that they check their portfolios and find out that perhaps it does. If you had advice for multinational banks on what to do so that they could systematically eliminate these cultural biases, what would you recommend?
Well, I think the main advice that we could derive from the paper would be that no matter whether you are a multinational bank or a national bank, it doesn't matter, to kind of increase the diversity of your managerial teams as much as possible. Because in our setting, what leads to a bias is the representation of one or two nationalities in your boards. When the nationalities actually increase that are represented in your managerial team, positive and negative biases from different nationalities will start canceling out each other so that you will rely less and less on such cultural biases.
Remarkable. And when people say, what is the point of diversity? Well, this is exactly the point of it. Orkun, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Tim.
The paper is called Cultural Stereotypes of Multinational Banks, and the authors are Barry Eichengreen and Orkun Sacker. It is discussion paper 17754 at CPR.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the best new research in economics every week. So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, why not leave a review? Next week on Vox Talks, how much should we pay our CEOs?